So we got to squeeze spending down. And then once we've done that, which I think we can do in the first couple of years, then we need to make major structural changes in our tax system. I think we need to cut the marginal income tax rate by way more than half. It needs to be a secondary tax, not a primary tax.
Where would you start squeezing?
Oh, my goodness gracious. First of all, I've said I don't think, I mean, little things, big things. I've said that I don't think we need auto inspection stickers. You know, 20...
I'm tempted to vote for 30, you just for that.
30, oh, thank you, dear. You know, 37 states in America have figured it out, and we haven't. You know, Idaho doesn't have them. North Dakota doesn't have them. I mean, these are winter states, too.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need this. And all the studies in the world, say that there's no correlation between having an auto safety inspection program today and having lower rates of accidents or fatalities or anything else. So we need to, you know, there are little things that we need to change. I've proposed an office. I said that on the first day I'm in office, I'm going to sign an executive order creating the Office of Regulatory Review and Repeal. We're going to look at regulations before they're promulgated by state agencies and make sure that they're, if they have to be promulgated, make sure that if they do have to be promulgated, that they're doing it the right way, cost-effective way, fair way. And then we're going to look at regulations all over the state, and we're going to say, wait a minute, do we need this? Do we need this? Do we need this? And we're going to start repealing what we don't need. We've never taken stuff off the books. We
just keep adding to it.
We're going to change that. We're going to take a look at we're going to zero base the entire budget. And by zero basing, I mean not that you take last year's spending level and say, should this go up or down by a few percent? You put everything down to zero, and then you say, okay, what do we need to do in each of these programs? Do we need the program at all? And if so, at what level? And then you prioritize everything, and then you draw a line. And you say, this is what we can afford. It's above the line. And if it's below the line, this is what we can't afford. And when we say zero base everything, we're not talking just about the $2.9 billion that the government spends in the appropriations process. There's another $3.5 billion every year that the government doesn't take in. It's foregone income and tax expenditures, so-called. Mm-hmm. Tax credits, tax breaks, taxes. That's just the same kind of spending. It's just by a different name. Foregone income is the same as a dollar you spend. A dollar you don't take in is a dollar you...
Right.
As
it's
much
the
as
same
a dollar
thing.
You spend,
it's
same
not
thing.
In your pocket.
Well, then you got to take those. Those stacked tax expenditure programs, they don't go through an annual process right now. They don't. They get enacted. Somebody says, well, I think we should have a tax credit for XYZ because if we do this, it's going to create a lot of jobs. And the legislature says, okay, and the governor signs it, and it goes on the books. And then it goes on cruise control. Never gets evaluated. Nobody ever looks at it to see whether it's working, whether it's yielding the benefits that people were told it would yield. Well, we're going to start doing that. And we're going to squeeze the living bejesus out of it all. And once we've done that, and once we've restored trust and credibility, then we're going to go after a big structural reform in taxes.
Well, that's a different answer than I've ever heard.
Well,
I like that.
That's the right answer. I've done it before, Michelle. I mean, I did it when I was associate director of the Office of Management and Budget in the White House. I mean, I killed projects that weren't working. I zeroed out programs that we didn't need. And you know what I learned?
What?
I learned there's life after no.
Should be your motto. Because I'm up in northern Maine, I'm going to ask you, what do you think about the 10th Amendment as governor, you know, from a governor's perspective?
Well, first of all, look, the 10th Amendment is part of our Constitution, and I'm in favor of every single part of our Constitution of the United States. If what you're really asking me is, what do you think about unfunded mandates? What do you think about excessive federal intervention in things that states can do or should do for themselves? I'm sympathetic. I mean, but to say I'm against every federal instruction, I'm not.
Right. No, I guess my question really is, would you be willing to invoke the 10th Amendment for something that, an unfunded mandate or something that you felt
sure.
was...
Sure, yeah, I would. And it's not just unfunded mandates from the federal government to the state governments, it's unfunded mandates from the states to local governments. I mean, what the state does is really worse in many respects. The state says to towns and cities all over the state of Maine, you've got to do this. Mm-hmm. And then it steals money from municipal revenue sharing and, right. and robs the cities and towns of the ability to do this.
Right. Or promises that it's going to fund you and then doesn't.
Or promises it's going to fund education spending at 55%. Well, we're now at 42% and we're heading south. We're going to be in the 30s in the next biennium. And any candidate for this office who tells you anything different is pulling your leg.
Two-part question, I suppose. What do you think about Dirigo and what do you think about Obama's health care?
You know, Dirigo was a program born of the best intentions. I'm from a family of doctors, my wife, my daughter, my father, my brothers, you know, on and on and on. And they're all dedicated physicians. And they all believe, as I believe, that we need to provide access to essential health care services to every citizen in the state of Maine. But we need to do it at a cost that we can afford, that we can sustain over time, and we need to do it in ways that provide the right incentives to people to take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And the right incentives to hospitals to provide performance instead of just procedures. Mm-hmm. The problem with Dirigo, I think, is a problem with the entire healthcare system in the state of Maine, and for that matter, in the nation, and that is that it's organized around and on the foundation of health insurance companies. We've made health insurance companies the organizing principle of healthcare. Mm-hmm. Wrong, shouldn't
Absolutely
have done it.
Wrong.
Got to change that. And the way we change it in Maine, and we're in a remarkable position to do this, in Maine today we have 39 acute care hospitals, and they are all not-for-profit. Together they now employ over 80% of all of our primary care physicians in the state of Maine. We are set up to be able to provide everybody with a medical home. We're set up to have incentives running the right way, to have wellness programs. And when you look around Maine at the big employers, Chinbro and Huzzy and Jackson Lab and Hannaford and even Eastern Maine Healthcare, they have self-insurance, they have strong wellness programs, and they have achieved success at bending down the cost curve, okay, because they're doing it primary care, they're self-insuring, and then they're going into a negotiable risk-based premium market for catastrophic care. The state of Maine has the leverage, the financial and leverage, to say to the Dirigo population, to say to teachers and state employees and retirees and everybody else, we're going to form a statewide accountable care organization, so-called, an ACO, where everybody has choice of who they go to see, where everybody is incentivized to take better care of themselves, where we're paying hospitals not for procedures but for performance, where everybody gets an annual checkup, and where the costs of health care in the state of Maine start going down instead of going up.
Well, I've got a question, and nobody's really been able to answer this. But when I look around Maine, and I've been to other parts of the country, they have the same thing, but we'll just talk about Maine. In Maine, every town I've been to, including Millinocket, we have HAND in East Millinocket, the Health Access Network. We have Katahdin Valley Healthcare, and they're federally subsidized and take in low-income and no-income people, sliding scale or free. And I'm wondering, isn't that already a foundation? I mean, I keep hearing people say, well, people are dying. Well, no, they have to go down to one of those health care places and
we have an extraordinary foundation. You know, Penobscot Community Health Care, which is headquartered here in Bangor, run by Reverend Bob Carlson, or chaired.
Right.
He founded it. It's a federally qualified health care facility. It's the same thing that you're talking about. They serve 45,000 patients. Facilities all over Eastern Maine. Their cost of doing business is 8%. Today in Maine, health insurers take 25 to 35 cents of every dollar that we spend on health care. There's something wrong with this picture. Bob Carlson, who runs Penobscot Healthcare, and even the heads of our bigger places like Eastern Maine Healthcare and Health and, and MaineHealth, they don't make what the head of Anthem makes. The head of Anthem makes $13 or $15 million a year. Anthem's profit last year was $4 billion plus. I mean, there's something wrong when health care insurance premiums are rising in the last 10 years 5 times faster than household incomes in Maine. We need to say to the health insurance companies, you can be part of this, you can play in this system, but we're going to design the system.
We've got different
in
rules
a way,
than you do.
Right? In a way that works for patients and that works for providers and that works for the state of Maine to keep our health care costs down.
Know anything about LIRC?
I do.
And what are your thoughts on LIRC?
My thoughts on LIRC are that you know, we have a unique set of circumstances in Maine. We're the most heavily forested state in the country. And what's unique is that the forests are not publicly owned by and large. They're privately owned, but they provide public access, which is really critical. And this relationship between owners and users and balanced uses is something that's developed in Maine over the course of generations, and it works. And our north woods, our woods all over Maine, are part of a heritage in our state. They're a heritage we share. And when I live in Bangor or I live in Portland or I live somewhere else, I have a feeling for the north woods that's real because I'm a Mainer. But at the same time, the people who live in the unorganized territories deserve and need representation to a greater degree, in my view, on LIRC than they have today. So the first point is I want to make LIRC look different. The second point about LIRC is that I don't think that licensing and permitting belong in the same agency. I would take planning and licensing and permitting out, and we can talk about whether it should go to the counties or whether it should go to the DEP, but it shouldn't stay with the planning functions. LIRC should be a planning agency. We need to plan. They didn't plan ahead for what happened with Plum Creek and around Moosehead. It ended up, in my view, in the right place, but I think it was a train wreck that didn't have to happen. And the fact that it took 5 years and 20 plus millions of dollars.
God knows how many investors.
Right, but that's a signal to people outside Maine who are looking here to invest. It's a signal that says, don't come because it's going to take you forever. With no predictability, no certainty, no timeliness. We can't afford that. We are in a worldwide competition for capital. And we need to figure out, and I think I have figured it out with respect to LIRC, we need to figure out how to preserve our resources, our assets that are so important to us in Maine, while at the same time inviting economic activity into the state. Investment into the state.
Any thoughts on a national park in northern Maine?
I'm opposed. The what I described is this unique ownership pattern, and the unique success we've had in promoting and achieving balanced use is something that I think is so deeply a part of Maine, of Maine's economy, that I don't think we need to or should go in the direction of a national park.
One last question that I can think of. The issue is already, well, for the moment, settled anyway, but I'd like your thoughts on forced consolidation versus home rule.
You know, the issue in education, let's just talk about it in education to start with at least. I think the goals of public education in the state of Maine, overarching goals, should be quality, cost-effective performance, cost-effectiveness, and equity. Kids who live in Greenville or in Millinocket or East Mill or Lubeck should have the same opportunities for a good education and the same opportunities for a secure life that a kid who grows up in Falmouth or Cape Elizabeth has, period. Okay? That's equity. Mm-hmm. Now, I think consolidation is a tool. It's not a goal. But it became a goal. And, you know, it's like a Phillips head screwdriver. It works in some cases. You know, when you've got a Phillips head screw, the only way you're going to drive it is with a Phillips head screwdriver. Right. But if you've got a slot head screw,
you're in trouble.
All right. We need to think again about consolidation, whether it's in schools or anything else, as a tool. Works in some cases, doesn't work in others. We've got to figure out how to achieve quality, cost effectiveness, and equity using all of the tools at our disposal. You know, home rule is really important in Maine. Local control is really important in Maine. Why? Because it's a sense of community and the civic culture of Maine that is so deeply a part of our souls.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, this is important. We all have to acknowledge to each other, and I will acknowledge it to you, Michelle, right now. We've hit the wall in Maine. We cannot afford to govern ourselves in quite the same ways that we always have. We can't. Look at our financial circumstances. If somebody tells you that the budget is balanced in the state of Maine, they're not telling you the truth. And I think we've got to figure out how to maintain local control. We've got to come up with devices, ways that maintain a secure sense of community, while at the same time figuring out how to achieve cost effectiveness and quality and equity in everything we do. And that's the way I come at all these issues.
So I'm not quite sure, though, where you stand on. Do you think that home rule is that the towns are sovereign in those kind of cases, or do you?
Well, you know, sovereignty, no town is sovereign. I mean.
I
come at this in a very different way.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I don't use buzzwords. I don't like slogans because they disguise stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to, when I say I'm going to be not sugarcoat anything, I'm going to tell the truth, I mean it. In Maine today, towns and cities are really important. They're important to all of us. Our communities are important to all of us. And I want us to be able to govern ourselves in ways that promote, preserve our civic culture and our sense of community. But I also want us to do things in Maine, provides public services in Maine of all sorts in ways that are cost effective. And frankly, if I'm going to pay as a taxpayer in one part of the state the cost of public services, and I do,
mm-hmm.
all over the state of Maine, I have an interest. You do too.
Yes.
All
right.
Over the state of Maine.
Absolutely.
And so this is a balancing analysis. You've got to come at every single one of these problems. And solutions have to emerge bottom up, not be forced top down.
Okay.
All right? And that's critically important. We haven't done that. And finally, when we start robbing Peter to pay Paul, when we start taking money away from towns and cities, stripping away revenues from municipal revenue sharing, we're making a huge mistake. We're losing credibility. We're losing trust, and the social fabric of the state is breaking. And I want to stop it, and I want to help put it back together. We are one community in Maine. I don't care how many Maines there are. There could be 495 of them, for goodness sake. You know, there are 50 cities in China with more people than we have in the state of Maine. And we're competing in this world. We're competing for goods, and we're competing for capital and export markets and so forth. And I'll tell you this. When I'm away from Maine, and someone asks me where are you from? I don't say I'm from Bangor or Hancock or Portland. I say I'm from Maine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll bet you do too.
I do. No one knows where Millinocket is.
Well, but we're all from Maine.
Yes,
that's
right.
The way we think of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm in Boston, if I'm at a Red Sox game and it ends late, you know, or if I'm in a meeting in Chicago and it ends anytime after 3 and I can't fly home
to
Bangor or Portland, and I get on a bus or I rent a car, and I start north about midnight, right? Or I'm at the Red Sox game, and it goes to the 12th inning, and I finally leave Fenway and get in my car and drive home. Around midnight, when I'm halfway across that bridge,
mm-hmm.
I'm home.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, or if I'm coming back from from St. Stephen into Calais, or across the border of Madawaska or Coburn Gore, or up to... As soon as I am across the line, I'm home. Well, we've got to we've got to start thinking that way all across the state of Maine. Because if we get in the same boat and we start working together, we can be the comeback state of the next decade. And I'm going to lead the way, and I want everyone in Maine to help.
You want to tell my listeners where they can go to find out?
Sure. Love it. Love to. They can go to Cutler2010.com, www.Cutler2010, Cutler2010.com. We'd love to show them our website. We're on Facebook. And if somebody just wants to call us and say, send me some material, we'll do that in the regular mail. And our number is 207-699-4401.
Thank you so much, Mr. Cutler. And this is Michelle Anderson. I hope you'll stick around when we have another interview with someone who's interested in the same issues we are north of Bangor.